Six music.
BBC Radio. Six music documentaries.
This is it.
Everett, and welcome to The First Time on Six Music. This is the series where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and look at the seminal first musical moments that shaped their lives and their careers. This week's guest is a single-minded, genre-bending musician whose music has blurred the boundaries between alternative, rock and R&B, and she's left an indelible mark on the musical landscape. As an artist, she's released a string of classic tracks, delivered some knockout vocal performances, and made albums that have raised the bar in terms of production. She's battled with the music industry, but throughout, her love of making music has never diminished. And she's recently brought to the international arena her other love, cooking. My guest on The First Time this week is Kelis. Here in the wake of a pop-up restaurant opening in London, she talks through her career to date, from growing up in a strictly jazz-only household with a saxophonist dad, through to discovering grunge at college and combining this with a passion for R&B. She talks about meeting production heroes The Neptunes, a pivotal partnership in her musical path, although you'll hear that getting a record deal for her wasn't always easy. She also tells of her struggles to be understood by a music industry that wanted to pigeonhole her, her astonishing year-long battle over the track Milkshake, and of course, how that song and its lyrics became part of popular culture. She also explains why she stepped out of music to focus on her love of food and what it was like working with the producer Dave Sitek on her most recent album, which was, of course, also called Food. But I started by asking Kelis, as I do with all my guests, when was she first aware of music?
The very first time, I mean, I honestly don't know. It had to be really young because my dad was a saxophonist, and so he would play. I mean, it was all day. I don't even think I ever had the thought. I think it just was.
It was just there?
Yeah.
What kind of stuff was he into?
Well, he played jazz, so he was doing, you know, but it was just him playing, so I don't know if he had I don't know what he was doing upstairs a lot of the time. like that's where all his music stuff was. Like he had a Rhodes, I remember, and he had like all his different saxophones upstairs. And
so was that like a special place to be in the house with the instruments? Did it have a certain kind of magic, or was it just like, yeah, it's just what he does all the time?
It was just, we didn't know anything else. It was just what he did. I actually would take my lessons upstairs too. And yeah, it was just like, that was like the music space. It was just like where it was.
Yeah, because you played like lots of instruments.
Well, I played the violin for a very long time, and then I played the saxophone because they were always there. And so I would pick them up and just start to learn. And then finally, you know, they got me my own. And then, yeah, there were always, you know, pianos, and there's always stuff to tinker around with. So I grew up in a very musical setting, even though, like, I think out of all of my sisters, I'm the only musical one, so.
Who did you want to be when you were little? Which musicians did you think?
Well, when I was really little, honestly, Sarah Vaughan I thought was amazing. It's what I saw. So I saw all these jazz singers. She had this just deep, really, like, smooth voice I thought was brilliant.
Spring will be a little late this year, a little late arriving in my lonely world over here.
And then, like Betty Carter, and she used to scat, and I used to think, like, that's so good, because then you don't have to remember words, and like, and I was little, and I just thought, that's amazing, like, I want to do that. Songs are so much better without words. And then Nancy Wilson and like Gloria Lynn and just all these great ladies, and then eventually like Etta James, and you know, it kind of progressed from there, but in the beginning, that's all I knew.
Something told me it was over. Yeah. When I saw you and her talking, something deep down in my soul said, cry, girl.
First record that you owned that was yours?
Gosh, the first record that I owned,
and you can't say it's something very cool if it was something embarrassing. You've got to be honest about it.
I can't remember the first record I owned, genuinely. I can tell you the first concert I ever went to, though. Okay. And that was a Eurythmics concert, And I was blown away. And I was like, this is outrageous. And the other thing is, too, because, you know, like I grew up in Harlem and I grew up listening to jazz music and to gospel music. And, you know, that was second nature to me. To see something totally different was like, I was in awe. I was like, what is that? You know, and And to see Annie was like, she was larger than life.
Great voice.
I mean, amazing. And, you know, it's funny because fast forward to my now career, I actually got to, like, sit in a room with her and, like, write with her. And it was pretty amazing.
What was she like?
She was really nice and just normal. And here you are sitting with this legend and she was just really chill. Yeah, she was like, I'm going on holiday. I was like, okay. I don't think I had much to say. I was kind of just like, I'll sit and I'll wait.
What Eurythmics track should we play there then?
Oh, man. I mean, I even do snippets sometimes, obviously, of Sweet Dreams, just because it's a classic. You have to.
Sweet dreams are made.
That moment when you start getting into albums, like a body of work that you start to, you know, get really into?
My parents were really strict, so we weren't really allowed to listen to a lot of stuff.
But if he was a jazz musician, surely then, you know.
Jazz was okay. But it was like a lot of the new stuff. My mom especially was just like, I don't know what that is. We're not doing that here. they were like jazz, like to this day, my mom is like, jazz, like that's it.
Straight edge.
That's it. She's not going to be broadened or anything. It's not happening. So like we could play all day long. You'd hear it in the house all day long. But like, you know, I came up in the grunge era. So like she was not interested like at all. All she saw was what she thought were very scruffy white people. And she's like, what is that? She was like, they're all high. It's not happening.
Oh, yeah, because jazz is a history of people that weren't very high.
Absolutely. No, she's the first one to tell you. Like, I think it was just like, I don't know, like that she understood. And that was the lifestyle. And yeah, they were all high. And she's the first one to tell you. But I think this looked dangerous or something. Like, she was like, I don't know what that is. We're not doing that. So, yeah, like Nirvana and Pearl Jam and like Smashing Pumpkins and the Cranberries and like all these things that, you know, I went to private school with, there was like two other black kids in my class, you know, so I was exposed to stuff that I wasn't getting at home, basically. And so aside from all the obvious stuff, like the jazz, and then, you know, I, like, there was, like, Stevie and the Marvin and the, like, that kind of stuff. But this was the first time where, like, I was picking stuff. Just, yeah, all this stuff that I wasn't allowed to listen to at home.
What should we play from that era, then?
Gosh, I mean, it's got to be Nirvana. Smells Like Teen Spirit.
When did you first hook up with Neptunes? When did you first hook up with Fran and Chad? How did that meeting work?
I was in high school, and we had constructed a girl group, and it was, like, me and just some friends.
What was it called?
It was horrible. It was
like,
it's awful. It was called BLUE. It was an acronym for Black Ladies United, as, of course, obviously. And yeah, and, you know, again, because I went to an art school, there was always, like, there was always something happening. You know, there was always plays and dances and gallery showings and, you know, talent shows. There was always something going on. We were all very, you know, kind of active in it. At the time, my best friend was friends with this other girl who was a rapper, and she was like, she's working with these guys, they're out of Virginia Beach, but, because of course, obviously, like, what's coming out of Virginia Beach at the time? We're from New York, we're like, everything else sucks. She's like, you meet these guys because they are kind of left like you. Then I met these guys, and there were these two, like, regular kind
nerdy.
Of like, yeah, pretty nerdy. Nerdy guys from Virginia Beach. And like I said, Virginia, we were like, whatever. but met them, and I think really just the talks about music made sense to me, and we wanted to do something different.
The broadness of influences.
Yeah. I think it was just the fact that we felt boundless. we wanted to do something different, and there was nothing to lose at that point. So it wasn't like you have to make a radio record or it's got to be a hit. We didn't know what any of that was, so we just like did stuff that we thought was cool.
Which is a good environment to create in, of course.
Yeah, it is.
I'm an outlaw. Quick on the draw. Something you never seen before.
You've never seen.
And I dare a mother come in my face. I got something chrome. And I got it from home.
And I got it from home.
And it ain't a microphone.
It ain't a mic.
And I dare a mother that come in my face. It's so real. How I feel. It's the society that makes me wanna kill. I'm just straight ill. Riding my motorcycle down the streets. While politicians they selling like strippers to me.
Baseball bats.
I got something for that. It goes black like a cat.
You know what that is.
So I dare a mother to come in my face. So real. How I feel. Is this society that makes a wanna kill? I'm just straight ill. Riding my motorcycle down the streets. While the government is sounding like strippers to me.
Spikers and Crombie, lab schools and tattoos, that's all me. Two blondes, four balls, feeling like Fonzie. You can find me drunk, whipping in my crash. Or find me chilling with crackers who like trash. Find me in court, smoking that ice. Burning the flag, all in the name of white trash. It's Harvey, baby. Christ on the arm, I'm gnarly, baby. For me, not Harley, baby. And you know the flow, ungodly, baby. So this party, baby. Chicks nickname me Cotton, they get high. My, I take them to my home, they call it the cockpit. Top of take off, they pennies, they drop quick. Now that's first class, ain't that some fly shit?
You mentioned your girl group we should talk about on Vogue. When did you first?
I was obsessed. Like, obsessed. I was obsessed. Because for our generation at the time, they were like the first girls that like felt like me. There was like Brownstone and SWV and all these chicks who we loved, but they didn't look like me. And these girls came out and they were like, be still my heart. Like everything is different now, you know, and they were glamorous and beautiful and they were all different. And it was always like with your friends, like, which one are you? You know, like I was like, well, I'm the other girl. Like I'm the addition. I'm like the fifth member. Like I want to be in the group.
They just don't know it yet. They just don't know it.
They have no idea they have another member. I'm like, I am singing my heart out. Like I've got the gloves. I'm like, ooh, pop. I'm in it. I am in it. And it was amazing for me. That was monumental because it was like they looked like something else and they looked like I could actually be in the group. And I was like, that's amazing.
Prejudice. Wrote a song about it. Like to hear it? Here you go.
Free your mind.
No!
September 1999, caught out there. Actually, was that your first featured release?
No. The first song that I was ever on was I sang the hook for Gravediggers, who were signed to, well, they were part of Wu-Tang. It was a song called Fairy Tales. At the time, you know, I was 15, so like we had no idea what it meant though. You know what I mean?
Like God.
Where music can take you now, I don't think I really understood that. I watched my dad be brilliant. You know, my dad ended up being a professor at Wesleyan University for music. He was a very well trained, very articulate, really very talented man, but he never made a dime. I had no idea what was happening. And so, yeah, that was the first thing. And then the second thing actually was ODB.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So then that came out.
That did okay.
It was cool, yeah. You know, mild recognition there. And actually, it's funny because right before we did that, Pharrell and I, we walked into, like, Elektra. I remember Sylvia Rome was like, too weird, not doing it. Like, she just was like, nope, never gonna happen. And
that's so strange because now it's one of those songs that's kind of a cornerstone of a certain sound and a certain jump in production.
But it was me, actually. It was me that she was like,
she's too weird.
Yeah, it wasn't old. Yeah, it wasn't dirty because he, you know, he already was who he was. It was me. We went to Sylvia Rome, we went to somewhere else, and then we went to Virgin. And yeah, basically everyone was like, well, wait, yeah, it's weird. We don't really get it. And then finally Virgin was like, sure, we'll sign her. After Old DB came out, and then shortly after Caught Out There came out, it was like Sylvia Rome called and was like,
hi,
let's do it. Yeah. We're like, well, yeah, we're signed now. And it's, yeah, like, thanks a lot for nothing at all.
You give me your number, I call you up. You act like you're interrupt. I don't have no trouble with you, but I have a little problem with you not me. Baby, you know I'ma take care of you, cause you said you got my baby and I know it ain't true. Is it a good thing? No, it's bad. For good or worse, makes you switch. So I walk on over with my crystal. Put away your pistol. Dirty won't be having it in this house, cause I'll cripple your style. Now that you heard my charming voice, you couldn't get another. You won't get moist. If you wanna look good and not be bummy, yo, you better give me that money. Wanna be with me? You wanna look pretty though in my video? Oh, dirty on the hat, and I let you all know. Just dance if you're caught up in the Holy Ghost trance. If you stop, I'ma put them killer ants in your pants. I'm the ODB, as you can see. FBI, don't you be watching me. I don't want no problems, cause I put you down in the ground where you cannot be found. I'm just dirt dog trying to make somebody. So give me my streaks and give me my honey. Radios play this all day, every day. Recognize I'm a fool and you love me. None of you know, better look at me funny. No, you know my name down, give me my money.
Hey, sir, hey.
Sing it.
Baby, I got your money.
Sing it, girls.
I said, hey.
Just sing it right now.
Baby, I got your money.
If 31 is hey, money, I think y'all should give him his money.
Baby, I got your money.
That's how I like you, girl.
That was ODB and Khalees with Got Your Money, of course. The second track to feature my guest on the first time this week, Khalees.
BBC Radio.
BBC Radio.
Six Music.
Babe, I love you, love you.
Yo, he's
babe,
lying.
I swear, held you when you were sick. Even the whole time I think to myself, this isn't fair. What is this I see?
No.
You don't come home to me.
Oh, no.
When you don't.
telling me lies. But to your surprise, look, I found her red coat and your bitch caught out there. Truck your flames and watch it blow up, blow up. Tell me, how you gonna see it now? So far from sincere,
I love you.
Fabrications in my ear drive me so far up the wall. I come sliding down. What is this I see?
I don't believe
you
this.
Don't come home to me. Well, you don't come home to me. I can't deal, can't bear.
I won't.
You keep telling me lies. But to your surprise, look, I hope you're happy since you're caught out there.
Yeah, you've been caught.
Yo,
yo, come on.
Yo, 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 yo,
come on.
Yo, 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 yo. I hate you so much right now. I hate you so much.
Vulgar,
not me. Why the hell her? Look, she dresses.
Look at her
mess. What do you see?
I don't know.
It's not all about cash.
Hell no.
Nor how much you flash. How I dress is a reflection of me. What is this I see? You don't come home to me. Well, you don't come home to me. Can't deal, can't bear.
Told you I
you
won't.
Keep telling me lies, but to your surprise, look, I got something for y'all since you're caught out there.
I'm Matt Everett, and this is the first time on 6 Music where we look at the key first moments in an artist's career. And my guest this week is Khalees. So Khalees released her first single, Caught Out There, in 1999, and immediately became the focus of a lot of attention. I asked her what it was like when that success first arrived, and how did it feel?
Well, it was exciting. Again, still, I had no idea what was to come. And I think more than anything, it was the issue of now I was a topic of conversation, which I wasn't prepared for at all. And the things that people were saying, I wasn't prepared for.
No,
I was just a girl, and this is just what made sense to me, and this is just what I was doing.
And now you're famous.
And all of a sudden, yeah, we're having conversations about, like, where does she fit? Because she's black, but yet she's screaming, and is this rock, and is it alternative? We've never had that. There's no place to put her. And yeah, this record is groundbreaking because there's nothing like it, but it's almost too groundbreaking because we don't have anywhere to put her, and we're not willing to put our neck out for her. Right now, there's a black community of people who are very eclectic and very open and very, like, welcoming and willing. But at the time, we weren't told that that was okay. No one said that you could do that, you know? And black girls were not wearing their hair natural, and they were not screaming, you know? And I was doing these things. And again, I wasn't conscious. I wasn't, like, yeah. Everyone's like, oh, it was so not a conscious decision.
Not a strategy.
No, it wasn't. That's what I was doing. That's just what I looked like, and that's what I was. My hair was pink before I ever got signed. It just was, because I could. So now I had to have these conversations, and in the midst of all that happening, it was like the first financial kind of just like everything was in disarray. And so, like, I just finished my second album and everyone from Virgin got fired. Like, everyone who you know, had been like championing me and like was there and was like, we get it. We're going to push for this. And they're all gone. And it was just like, literally, it was like one thing after another that just was like, okay, are you going to do this and stay on your ground or are you going to crumble and cave? And so, you know, yeah, I kind of just was like, puff my chest out bigger.
Obviously, we've got to mention Milkshake. I'm really interested in how it must be to watch something like that become part of popular culture and its popular phraseology, and it's kind of the word is synonymous with the song, because that doesn't happen with a lot of people. Very few songwriters, very few people get those songs.
Well, I think it kind of, again, it spoke to where, like, just what we were doing. You know, it wasn't like a master plan either. It was just like, everything sounds this way, we don't want to do that, let's do something else. This is now my third record. And the same thing happened all over again. Literally, like, I signed and then everything fell apart. Arista folded.
Learning lessons about the music industry here, aren't you?
Yeah, don't do it. You know, but yeah, I mean, like, here I am again. I got signed by L.A. Reid, like, personally. And then he left. And Milkshake had just come out. Like, it had just come out. And let me tell you something. What's really funny about it, you know, here we are talking about Milkshake 12 years later. Mm-hmm. People hated it. We fought for that record. It took over a year to break that record.
Get off.
It took over a year. I mean, to the point where people, they hated it. They would not play it. DJs didn't get it. We fought like hell for that record and for that whole album, honestly. All of the artists from Arista got split up. I ended up going to Jive, which is a traditionally very pop label. And, you know, I was put in a situation where I would have never signed there. They would have never signed me. And they didn't love the music. And they were just like, we don't care. We're not going to let you go because, you know, like, you cost too much. but we don't really care. And we would have never signed you to begin with. And I knew that. But here Milkshake is out. And I'm like, it's going to work. And Pharrell kept saying, it's going to work.
How good did it feel, though, when it lifted, you know, when people started to fall in love with the track?
It was amazing, but it was terrifying because there was still no infrastructure to follow it. It finally hit and it was like, whoa, boom! Like, it was huge. But then it was like, we were still in the middle of this, like, shuffle. What do I do? I don't know what to do. You know, it's like, I don't know what to do. So that whole thing, it was a mess, you know? And that's when we put out Trick Me. It's amazing, I think, because for me, whether it was intended to be that way or not, it was always only the music.
My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge. My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge.
I know you want it. The thing that makes me what the guys go crazy for. They lose their minds the way I want. I think it's time.
La 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 la.
Warm it up.
La 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 la.
The boys are waiting.
La 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 la.
Warm it up.
La 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 la.
The boys are waiting.
My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge. My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge.
You're on it. You want me to teach thee techniques that freaks these boys. It can't be bought. Just let these get caught. Watch if you're smart.
La 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 la.
Than yours, damn right, it's better than yours.
boys away.
My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours.
When did you first fall in love with Sheryl Crow? This is a songwriting inspiration then.
I think it was probably around my second album. So I must have been, I was like 19. And I just was like, wow, these are such great songs. Like, I don't remember how I heard her first. I think it just like, she just appeared. And I just was like, listening to these songs. And I would listen to these songs for hours and hours. And I was just like, I remember thinking literally like, but they're so conversational. That's what I loved about them so much. They were so, because I think honestly too, like everything got, I don't know, when I thought about the things I loved the most, they were the songs that were the easiest. They were the songs that were the most conversational. They were the most, like, it just made sense. Yeah.
Speak to you.
Yeah, completely. And she just was this great writer. I was like, she's brilliant. And these are such wonderful female songs. I just loved it, you know. And I think that's, especially to my second album was when I really, I'd always written, but, like, I kind of got my legs here, I think. And it was from listening to people like Sheryl Crow and Roberta Flack, and like, these are great female songwriters, and I was just like, you know, kind of enthralled in this life.
What's the song we should play of hers?
One of my favorite songs is My Favorite Mistake.
Why that one?
It's poetic without being annoying. Do you know what I mean? Like, sometimes poems are like irritating. It's like poetic in the most perfect, most like fabulous way.
Kellis was here 2006. Did you actually think about just giving up music altogether? Because you've said this.
I'm a really extreme person too, so I think at the time I was so fed up, I couldn't possibly see beyond the moment that I was just like, I'm so over this, like, I'm over it. I'd already gotten so much further than I ever expected or that I ever planned, so there was really no real love loss. It was kind of just like, I could take it or leave it. For me, the musicianship and the musical side of it, no one can ever take that from me. So being famous doing it is not really the relevant part of it, you know? It was making music. I can make music all day. You might never know it, but I can do it. You know, and so, like, I don't need a producer. I don't need a label. I don't need a budget. If I want to make music, I can make music. So for me, walking away, I was like, yeah, I can walk away. And then, too, the digital stuff, it just really started. So, like, I remember having a conversation with my label head, and he was like, we don't really care what's going on with your album because you just sold 1.6 million ringtones on Bossy. And he was dead serious.
Man, do you remember when ringtones were a thing? That's just reminded me.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, literally, like, it went from that didn't exist, and then all of a sudden, like, that's what people cared about. And I was just like, what? I was like, I hate this guy. You know, like, it was terrible. But yeah, I think at that point I was like, yeah, I've had enough. I'm like, I am over this.
we should talk about food.
Yeah.
You've talked a lot about how you kind of professionally stepped into the world of cuisine. What was the first thing that you remember getting right in the kitchen and going, okay, this has worked out really special and I think I can do something?
I don't think it was one thing, but it was definitely sauce. I'm a saucier. Everything's better with sauce. I am really at peace in the kitchen. I really enjoy it. After that period of my life when, you know, I finally got off of Jive Records and I went to culinary school, when I went back to music, I went back for the love of music, but there was a very kind of bittersweet lingering there, and I think it was because, like, I had found something else that I can do that brings me that electricity still and that excitement, and I had to kind of put it aside. And so that, like, was really sad. I was super sad about it. So the fact that, like, you know, everything's come full circle is, it just makes me really happy. It's great.
Talking about food, I did want to ask about the album Food 2014 and your first impressions of Dave Sitek. Because I met him here and I didn't even know it was him. I just thought he was just some guy who wandered in with the band.
Gee, he's, like, so cool. And,
yeah.
Like, I mean, I love that guy. He's... When we first met, yeah, I'm like, he's like a weirdo in like the most fabulous way, but he's like so strange and does not care at all. Like, he could care less, which obviously we completely have a great, you know, understanding of each other in that sense. But like, I met him and I was just like, oh, cool. Like, you know, I knew TV on the radio, but I didn't really know what his role was. You know, I didn't understand the whole thing. And then we got in together and like, I started talking to him. It was the first time that I had a moment like we had in the very beginning with the Neptunes. It was the first time.
That's nice.
Again, you know, and so it was like, ah, great, I can do this.
He's a what? He's a what? He's a newspaper man. And he gets the studiest from a newspaper stand. From his boots to his pants to his comments and his rants. He knows that any little article will do. Though he expresses some confusion about his part in the play. And he can't understand that he's not in command. The decision's underwritten by the cash in his hand.
Food. It's a good record.
It is a good record. It's super honest, you know, and like, I mean that not just lyrically, but like, it's honest just like in everything that we did. You know, we made music and we had such a good time doing it. And he's so brilliant without being overbearing, which is hard to find in a brilliant person. He's brilliant and so not like overimposing his thoughts or ideas or anything on you. He's totally able to just like walk away. He's like, you know, do it, whatever. You know what I mean? He's great. He's absolutely brilliant.
And my eardrum reminds me this language that's way down in my feet. And these moments move like debris.
What's next then? Are you going to open a restaurant in London? Make something permanent?
I would love to. I mean, for me, like, being in the kitchen is, it is my happy place. It's, like, where I want to be right now. So, like, yeah, wherever I can cook, I'm always game. I think really what's next is I am slowly, very, very slowly, like sloth slowly, putting together a new record.
So we keep you in the worlds of food and we keep you in the world of music. We get both.
Yeah, I don't plan on choosing right yet.
What's the last song we should finish with? Your choice.
Let's play Roberta Flack and Donny Hathaway, You Are My Heaven.
Why that song?
Because just, it's great. I think them together, they were like the perfect composer-songwriter marriage. They were great.
Then that's what we'll play. Good to speak to you. Thank you.
You too.
An angel whispered to me when I woke this morning that I would find heaven by my side. And there you were, you angel, heaven in the morning, laying in my arms and in my life. And I reached this decision, I love you, my religion, heaven's in my soul and in my heart. No one could ever change my mind, oh no. If I got you here, right by my
This is BBC Radio 6 Music.
bad mother. Paid the cost to be the boss. Paid the cost to be the boss. Look at me. Know what you see? See a bad
BBC Radio 6 Music.
This is Glastonbury on BBC Radio 6 Music.